Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Thursday, May 26, 2016, 12:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you are now listening to The Philosophy Show. My name's Thomas, the host of this show. It's episode 140, and the title today is The Likelihood of a New Unpersonal Society Plus Negating Peace. And we're going to get right into it here. This is a call-in show. The guest call-in number is area code 646 929-1344. Again, that's area code 646-929-1344. And it's a half an hour show, and feel free to, we can talk about the issues of the day, advice if you'd like, politics, reviewing different things, philosophy, of course. This is a philosophy show, and you can find us at blogtalkradio.com/philosophy. And you can also look at one of my YouTube channels if you'd like, youtube.com/blastoffreshair. And so was making me think about this is a couple of things, actually. One was an article by Peter Capelli, who is, I guess, a professor at the Wharton School of Economics, which I guess that's the place where Trump keeps saying where he graduated from. Well, maybe he should listen to this guy instead of Henry Kissinger and some of the other, you know, the Goldman Sachs person he hired as his campaign advisor and some other people. And then also there's another article I was looking at about facial recognition that supposedly can spot potential terrorists and pedophiles and other unsavory characters. And so, yeah, I've actually done a little bits of looking around the job marketplace here, and for one place, you know, I had to take all these quizzes, and you know, I never talked to anyone, but I took all these quizzes. It was all online, and I'm sure they have algorithms that figure out certain things. Certain things are kind of like IQ tests with puzzles, and other things are questionnaires, and you have to answer honestly, of course. And it was stupid stuff. Some of it was like, you know, just testing your honesty and do you mind your manager constantly looking over your shoulder and stuff like that. Of course, you know, I'd put, no, I don't like that. And, So, you know, you're left to a computer algorithm, and you never know what they're looking for, because some of these are trick questions, and are they just looking for people that are qualified, overqualified, underqualified? You know, I've heard of some police departments where they actually won't hire people with an IQ over 100 because they want them not to be too smart, because they might quit early, or who knows what else, other possible agendas could be, or question authority. And you know, there is a high unemployment rate, even though whatever the figures publicly are, there's plenty of populations that, especially with young people, that have high unemployment rates. And then there's the hidden unemployment rates. And so I'm just going to just skim over a couple articles here. Here's one by Peter Capelli. It was updated November 15, 2013 with the Wall Street Journal, "Why Focusing Too Narrowly in College Could Backfire." Let's see what he says. Basically, well, today's jobs aren't necessarily tomorrow's. The trend towards specialized vocational degrees is understandable. But guessing about what will be hot tomorrow based on what's hot today is often a fool's errand. The problem is that the job market can change rapidly for unforeseeable reasons. And changes in regulations can rapidly create and kill fields. And for example, the Sarbanes-Oxley Act amped up demands for accountants. Emerging technologies can be just as disruptive. So another important caveat that doesn't get discussed much, it may be worse to have the wrong career focus in college than having no career focus, because skills for one career can't be used elsewhere. And focusing on a very specific field also means that you miss out on courses that might broaden your abilities. And now in some fields like engineering, the only way in is with a specialized degree. So not to say that it's always bad. And then he had another article here that was dated also The Wall Street Journal, dated October 24, 2011, and it was called "Why Companies Aren't Getting the Employees They Need." Conventional wisdom is that our education system's failing our economy, but our companies deserve a lot of blame themselves. They always say the companies, that is, that, you know, there's an unprecedented amount of job openings, but not enough qualified people are applying. And that's bad for the companies. It's bad for the economy. So it's a catch-22 situation. So some of the myths that he was talking about is that the problem is an illusion. The perceptions about a lack of skilled workers are pervasive. 52% of U.S. employers surveyed say they have difficulty filling positions because of talent shortages. The real problem is, more appropriately, an inflexibility problem. Finding candidates to fit jobs is not like finding pistons to fit engines, per se, where the requirements are precise and can't be varied. Jobs can be organized in many different ways so that candidates who have very different credentials can do them successfully. Another point he makes is a training shortage. There are plenty of people out there who could step into jobs with just a little bit of training, even recent graduates who don't have much job experience. Despite employers' complaints about the education system, college students are pursuing more vocationally oriented coursework than ever before. But unfortunately, American companies don't seem to do training anymore. And data is hard to come by, but we know that apprenticeship programs have largely disappeared, along with management training programs. And the amount of training that the average new hire gets in the first year or so could be measured in hours, counted on the fingers of one hand. And now companies in other countries do things differently. In Europe, for example, training is often mandated, and apprenticeships and other programs that help provide work experience are part of the infrastructure. The result, European countries aren't having skill shortage complaints at the same level as in the U.S., and the nations that have the most established apprenticeship programs, the Scandinavian nations, Germany and Switzerland, have low unemployment. So the way forward is, you know, well, companies could work with education providers. They could bring back aspects of apprenticeship, promote from within. Employees have useful knowledge that no outsider could have and should make great candidates for filling jobs higher up. In recent years, however, an incredible two-thirds of all vacancies, even in large companies, have been filled by hiring from the outside. And let's see. So that's a thing as well. And then he had an update to this article, October 26, 2011. And another point he made was automated screening, where many readers, he was saying, talked about applicant tracking software and other computerized systems that screen applications electronically. Employers are overwhelmed by applications, and there's no way they can go through them all by hand, so they use these systems to help. The downside is that the screening criteria are imperfect. Typically, they look for keywords, and if you don't include the right keywords, out goes the application. And so that's very true. And so a lot of companies, well, a lot of big companies like Microsoft and other companies sell these algorithm softwares for human resource departments. And, you know, you take these tests or you have a resume and they just look for keywords. There's no thought process. And there's, you know, a lot of people that could be qualified, but they just have some wrong keywords in the mix, and then they're filtered out. And plus, another thing is, it's not just a problem of finding the right people, but a lot of companies just aren't paying the right wages to attract people. You know, they're starting them at really low wages. So they, if they raise the wages, they'll find more qualified people. And nowadays, you know, they kind of, employers, companies have kind of created this free agent model. I mean, if you look at the trend, there's a lot more independent contractors, people being paid with 1099s instead of W-2s, because companies don't have to provide as many benefits. There's less paperwork. You know, they can just fire them at a whim. There's et cetera. It's just more beneficial for the employer. In some ways, it could be in some ways, and, you know, they can skirt around the Obamacare and other things, minimum wage laws, et cetera. I mean, paying self-employment tax like Social Security and Medicare. Now, the people who get the 1099s are going to have to pay taxes, and they're going to have to pay Social Security and Medicare on their personal taxes. So then they're going to have to pay almost twice as much, because they're going to have to cover the costs that the employer would have normally had to pay. But at the same time, some people might not be looking for a long-term employment. They might just want a temporary or seasonal employment, so it could be good for a lot of people as well. I mean, there's pros and cons to everything, and lots of things to consider that most people don't. So, I mean, if you think about employment, you know, the history of it, I mean, it probably started out before, you know, let's say in the medieval days and the Roman Empire days and before that. I mean, all throughout that time is pretty much the same. I mean, people had skills, they were smiths and whatever, you know, blacksmiths, or they made arrows, or they made shields, or they made shoes, or they made this or that. They had their specialization. They were their own boss, or they could probably work at a farm or work for the king or work for someone. You know, they might have benefits or not, or benefits that were with wherever they might have worked. You know, if they worked at a farm, I'm sure they probably got some extra food as well as payments. And, you know, there has been a monetary system for a long, long time. And there's been inflation, and there's been, you know, pretty much the same things we've had today, amazingly. And that all changed around the time of mass production and the higher technology, around the beginning of the, well, you could say the end of the 19th century, the beginning of the 20th century. And then, and with the income tax, actually. Because with the income tax and Social Security and Medicare, pretty much all your benefits were tied to your job. So your retirement was tied to your job. Your Medicare was tied to your job. And, you know, because when you get paid, if you get paid by W-2, your employer pays half of your Social Security and Medicare. So what you see taken out on your pay stub for Medicare, Social Security, your employer matches that. You might not know. So you might think that your cost to an employer is just how much you're paid hourly, but it's more than that. And so, anyways, now I'm going to come back to that in a second, but back to this article about underqualified job seekers. He wrote here, imagine a car manufacturer that decided to buy a key engine component for its cars rather than make them. The requirements for that component change every year. If you can't get one that fits, the car won't run. What would you say about that manufacturer if it just assumed the market would deliver the new components with the specifications it needed when it needed it and at the price it needed? It would certainly flunk risk management, and that's what a lot of IT companies are doing. We'd expect the manufacturers to keep its suppliers informed about its needs, working with them as far in advance as possible to ensure that they could supply exactly what the manufacturer needed when it needed it. We should also expect employers to work with schools to be involved in co-op programs and support students pursuing the needed courses and to train and develop current employees for skills. And also, a lot of times they don't, with these algorithm softwares, a lot of companies don't look at the long term. So if they hire less people, immediately they have a smaller budget, and that goes to their bottom line. But they might not realize by hiring one or two extra people, that person might be more productive in the long run, and they would actually save the company more money, or it would actually help increase the revenues for the company in the long run. And then there's another article I was looking here, dated June 12, 2015, The Danger of Picking a Major Based on Where the Jobs Are. And the point there is the reason that hot jobs are hot is precisely because you can't predict them. And so, So that's, and that there goes beyond that, because now a lot of these softwares that do, that are sold to HR departments, human resource departments, you know, the next level of that, and I've already seen some advertised, are that, and we have a caller online, we're going to take the call very soon, just want to finish this thought here, is that they're going to screen your heart rate while you're on the job. You know, they're going to take facial algorithms that say are whether you're dissatisfied with the job or whether you're grateful for it, you know, and they're going to have stuff like that, that you're just going to be micromanaged to death. And you know, then that's going to kill morale and stuff like that, I think. So it's really the unpersonal society. But let's hear what we have someone here with some words. Hey,
yeah,
caller.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I was just, first of all, I was just tuning in and listening to what you were saying. So what's the gist of your, I guess, your philosophy? I heard you say that they're taking over. Who are you talking about, the companies? What?
Well, the gist of what I was talking about was there's an article written recently, you can look it up, by Peter Capelli in the Wall Street Journal, where he's talking to, you know, you hear the arguments from a lot of companies that there's plenty of jobs out there, but there's just too many unqualified people nowadays. I mean, if you look at the unemployment rate of people 25 and under or 30 and under, you know, it's 20, 30, up to 50% in some communities. And the point he was making is that there isn't just unqualified people. It's that some of this blame can be given to the employers. You know, there's no longer apprenticeships as much. There isn't, you know, like on-the-job training. And then they're using these sophisticated hiring software things where if someone applies for something, if the software doesn't recognize certain keywords, it just immediately throws out the resume or application without meeting with someone. And so
right.
I'm
familiar
yeah, so
with
just
that. Yes.
Yeah, and I'm just talking about these new softwares that people use that are very unpersonalized. That's, you know, just kind of, it's very unpersonalized and everyone's just treated based on an algorithm. And, you know, it's kind of a prejudice and it kind of goes into, you know, like if you don't answer the questionnaire right, you know, you might be considered someone who's not a team player per se because the way you might have answered a subjective question. I mean, I took a test the other day applying for a job and, you know, I had some weird questions like, do you mind managers looking over your shoulder? Do you usually trust managers? I mean, I knew all the answers I could have put to make it look like, you know, I would be ideal, but I just answered it honestly. And so, no, I don't like people looking over my shoulders. And, you know, that probably was a notch off. But and the next wave of this will be you know,
wait a minute. Did you get the position?
Yeah.
I mean,
no, I didn't. It said I was qualified, but they're looking for someone else. But
me just jump in and say, well, I think people have to play the game. I think some of the things that you mentioned have to be handled through the local politicians. Maybe a couple of lawsuits filed. But if companies are doing things that, and some of them are, I think this H-1V1 visa, something like that, where they are misusing that in order to hire Indian people primarily and pay them lower wages than the people who previously held the job and actually train them. I understand a company like Edison and if I would think real hard, some other, I think, what's his name, accused Disney of doing the same thing.
Yeah, I think it was Bernie Sanders who accused Disney of...
How could I forget Bernie? Yes, yes. Yeah, Uncle Bernie pointed that out. So companies are doing things, but this is where I think there is a legitimate role of government, and this is where the people have to, you know, dust off their paper or their pads, paper pads, and write their Congress people and get them involved in this, because there can be pressure put, and should be pressure put on politicians, I mean put on companies both at the federal and also the local level, because when companies come into a particular city, they do have to you know, abide by the laws. And if they're doing things that strictly, you know, harm people, violate their privacy, and companies will do that. I mean, they flex their muscles too. So it's just kind of, you know, one has to kind of create a balance of power as far as I see it. But I don't know, based on what you said earlier about whether or not one of the questions on the questionnaire was, do you mind people looking over your shoulder? And you feel that the best answer should have been no, correct?
Yeah, I mean, they said there's no right or wrong answer. They want you to be honest. I mean, so maybe that could be such an obvious question that if you answered it yes, then they think you're kind of, you know, kissing their butt. But if you answered it no, maybe they think that, you know, it could be a trick question as well. So,
okay, so, does, okay, but this is where doing one's due diligence, as far as I'm concerned, comes in. I mean, one has to research the corporation or hiring entity and know their culture. And I think answering them according to their culture, I mean, we would like to be perfectly honest. Nothing, I have no problem with that. But sometimes one has to be practical also. And if it means you're getting a job, well, say, hey, yeah, I can be. Now, this is just, you know, my way of thinking. Yeah, I can take a person looking over my shoulder. And then you advance in the corporation to the point to where you have much more control over that. Because one, as far as I'm concerned, one has to do what they need to do to get in. And, you know, I mean, does that make sense?
If one
doesn't need the job, okay, fine. But if you need the job, I think it's good to, you know, play along.
Yeah, I know. I hear you. You have a legitimate point. And part of the article also, and this it wasn't just about me personally. I mean, a lot of companies are saying, you know, there's an unqualified market out there. And, you know, some of the practices is that they could advance more people. They could advance more people within the company. They could do more, you know, apprenticeships where they're not doing that because they're just so dependent on, like, human resource softwares for applicants. And, so by just hiring more within, advancing people that already work, offering more training, giving people a higher wage when they start might attract more people. But I was also saying is that since the beginning of the last century, most people were kind of more entrepreneurial and had their own skills and were more freelancers and independent contractors. Now, starting with the 19th century, with the big corporations and like mass production, like the automobile, where you had a lot of employees working for a specific corporation, all the benefits were with that corporation, whether it be your retirement or whether it be your health care. I don't think those things should be with the company. It actually free up the company a little bit. And, you know, so I kind of agree with a public option for Medicare for all and Social Security. And I would actually like, and nowadays it's kind of getting more back to people, like being more of independent contractors, having their own skills. There's a lot more people being hired as independent contractors. A lot of companies are hiring people not as employees anymore, so they can get around giving them health care or having to have self-employment taxes taken out for employees. They'd rather just hire them as an independent contractor and give them a 1099. I mean, look at like Uber and all these other kind of new jobs, and people in the IT field are more comfortable working from home. And so in a sense, you were kind of getting away from that corporateness. And I would actually like to see a lot more small businesses and people's healthcare and retirement not be tied to a corporation. A lot of people might not want to work for a corporation for their entire life and retire with that corporation anymore. And so I would like to see the Small Business Administration put in like $1 trillion and like give tons of people loans to start their own businesses, knowing that a lot of them are going to fail, but at least let them try. And I mean, that would be kind of my philosophy is, you know, and like what Bernie Sanders says, make sure everyone has an opportunity, not just a guarantee of results for, you know, good education. And, you know, so I don't know what you think about that.
Well, yeah, I do think the paradigm has changed, the occupation paradigm. And I know that corporations have, they're always looking to, or businesses, period, are always looking to cut cost. And I don't know, are you a capitalist?
I mean, I'm a little bit a mix of both. I mean, I do believe there are definite benefits to the free markets, and I do think
right.
some basic things are better in the commons, like major things like healthcare, your roads, bridges, retirement, like at least a baseline of retirement, like Social Security. I think, you know, we should have public options. But I think
right.
in the actual free market, yeah, I believe in the free markets and I believe in capitalism. But, you know, I kind of believe in a mix of both, actually.
But mostly capitalism, though, right?
If I had to choose between a complete free market or complete socialism, I would definitely pick the free markets for sure. I mean, if those were my two choices, I would definitely pick the libertarian thing. But I don't think it has to be those two choices. I do think we can have public options, you know, where people get together and pool up their buying purchasing power and negotiate and get good deals. But yeah, I mean, I definitely very much believe in a free market for sure.
Right. Well, you know, we do have a mixture right now. Well, you have Social Security, and then you have the health care. What's the affordable health care, as it were? Now, from what I understood, 85% of people were covered. It was only 15% that the entire, you know, health field was changed for. Or the entire field of healthcare was changed to accommodate 15% of the people, which I think was a little bit off balance. And
yeah,
I guess we'll have to see how that works. I think capitalism is the method that inspires the most people. I don't agree with Bernie in terms of socialism. And I don't know if you're familiar with what's called the U.S. debt clock.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it, actually. You can go on the website, and it's just constantly going up. I mean, as far as that goes, sir, I believe we should have a public bank, like kind of like North Dakota has their own public bank, and we should have a public bank.
Yeah, I'm familiar
bank.
With that.
We should bring back the greenback dollar like that Abraham Lincoln had, and we should allow for the libertarians, which I sense you're probably a libertarian, we should allow competing currencies as well. If people want to barter or trade in gold, by all means, let them freely do that. And if we had a public bank, we could, you know, do a lot better, actually.
Yeah, and correct me if I get this incorrectly. North Dakota has the strongest economy of any state, correct?
Yes, and actually with the fiscal, the Great Recession in 2008, North Dakota was hardly affected by it. Now, they have a small population. Maybe that has something to do with it, but you can actually there's a YouTube channel that has a lot of information. It's youtube.com/publicbanktv, or it might be Public Banking TV, but they have a lot of resources on there, and they have a lot of articles or video articles about North Dakota and beyond.
Right. Now, they compete with the Federal Reserve, and, you know, I understand that there would be a bumping of heads if a lot of states started to do that. But I think that I was very impressed when it's been several years ago now, but I read an extensive article about North Dakota and the power of their economy. Now, they do have a fiat system, but all of the proceeds are reinvested into the state, and therefore they benefit from owning the system. Is that the way you understand it?
Yes, and they allow other, you know, so their public bank, you know, a lot of states and municipalities have to borrow for their budgets and then pay back part of their budget as interest to banks, actually, believe it or not. And so if they have their own public bank, you know, they do have more control over it. And so the interest that they earn goes back into the public budgets. And so
and it's all in-house. That's the point that I understand. It's all now there is some manipulations. There's certainly some shenanigans going on. You know, that's true anytime. I mean, I've read about monetary systems, and I'm not getting too deeply into that. But the point of it is, any monetary system that is owned by the people that system affects, they're going to be better off because they get all the proceeds. And you're right, they have a public bank, as it were, or they're their own Federal Reserve. But
yeah,
you know,
and
everything is owned by the state. I think that is the
well. They also, they allow the Chase Manhattans and the, you know, Bank of America to do business there. So it's kind of
right.
Here's kind of what I believe in is a public option, kind of like the post office versus UPS and FedEx. The post
right.
office is completely voluntary. You're not forced to use it. I don't think you should be forced to have a mailbox on your yard, but if you want one, it's absolutely, it's not, you know, and postal people don't, I think pretty much the government agencies where the employees don't carry guns are pretty much the good ones. So the post office is a perfect example. I mean, it's a completely voluntary system. It does pay for itself, and it allows competing organizations like the UPS or FedEx or DHL, et cetera, to compete with it. And so to me, that if there's a need for a public option, have a public option. It will do good or bad based on the market. It kind of sets a base standard where, you know, the services and the products are, you know, determined by the market, but they don't have to spend a lot on CEO pay and advertising and things like that. I mean, that's pretty
right,
much
that's
what I believe in. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, are you basically, I mean, I heard you explaining some problems, but are you overall optimistic, if that's appropriate to ask?
Yeah, I think, You know, you kind of have to be optimistic. I would like to see a better future where it's more voluntary. And I think we're going in this, a lot of things are going in the right direction and have been, but there's still, you know, there's just different challenges that we have now. And a lot of times we're a lot more insensitive to things that, you know, society has made great strides. You know, everyone has a right to vote now. everyone's equal under the law. But at the same time, if you look at the amount of deaths in the last 100 years with the world wars and stuff like that, I mean, we're still in a pretty barbaric stage, you know. So it's the best of times, it's the worst of times.
Well, there are, you know, I'm optimistic myself, and there are things coming down the pike. Now, you mentioned wars. Now, I'm for what's occurring now. It appears that women will pretty soon be drafted or have to register for the draft. There isn't a draft. And one of the points, I see nothing but positivity associated with that. And since you brought up the wars, the point I would make there is that since women are the valued sex, I mean, that's just the way our society is leaning at this time, wars will be fewer and shorter in duration, because we won't like to see women coming home in body bags and dismembered, you know, the way we tolerate with men. So I don't know if you had thought of that particular angle, but the House Armed Services Committee just passed. They voted to allow women into the. They voted to allow funding for women to be registered with the Selective Service. Were you aware of that?
I was aware of that. I did think about it briefly, so I did hear a little bit about it. And so I see it makes me think of two things. One is equal under the law. We should all be equal under the law. And so that's a good thing. The bad thing, though, is, you know, when we all turn 18, we have to register for the draft. But what I don't get is, when we all turn 18, we should all have to, what I would think be even better is we would all need to have to register to vote. And so I'd like to see more of an emphasis on a mandatory registration to vote instead of a mandatory registration to possibly go to war. In fact, that's one thing Bernie Sanders was talking about. And I don't agree with everything that he says, but he does make some good points. And by the way, he's the only candidate running that voted against bailouts, which was the most socialist thing in the world, you could say, and he actually voted against that. He said that once everyone turns 18, they should be automatically registered to vote.
That's a thought. Yeah, that's a. You're saying obviously they can vote, but they should be registered. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people, you know, and I'm not saying they should have to, but I'm just saying that compared to the registration for the draft, which is more important, I mean, if you're going to have priorities.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. One distinction that I would make is that we do have a mandatory requirement, and you did not specify, so I will. It's males only have to register for the Selective Service. So the thing now is, since the ground combat restriction has been removed, so that means now there's no reason for women not to register. And I think, see, there's a huge problem with men and women today, and not just say relationship-wise, you know, there are more single people than married people since 2010, according to Pew Research.
Yeah.
And that's a big problem right there, because if you don't have functional families, I mean, that's a huge problem. And like I said, I don't think it'll be necessarily going to war. It's just a preparation or preparedness in case there is. And also it has to do with, and I'll just, you know, lift this out,